scripture you're going to hear. You will know it. You know it so well. We've talked about these scriptures time and time and time again. And it's a bit like so many other things. Sometimes when we repeat things, it can be reassuring. It can be nice. It can be comforting. And sometimes as we repeat them, we can see things that we hadn't quite picked up the time before. So we're actually going to be looking at the story from Exodus 1, and it starts in verse 8. And I'm going to read it, and it says, "There came to power in Egypt a new king who had never heard of Joseph." I ought to say I'm reading from the New Jerusalem Bible, but it's slightly different to yours. But don't worry. He said to his people, "The Israelites are more numerous and stronger than we are. We must take precautions to stop them from increasing any further. Or if war should break out, they may join the ranks of our enemies, may take arms against us, and then escape from the country." And accordingly, they put taskmasters over the Israelites to wear them down by forced labour. And in this way, they built the store cities of Pithom and Ramesses for Pharaoh. But the harder their lives were made, the more they increased and spread, until the people came to fear the Israelites. So the Egyptians gave them no mercy in the demands they had made, making their lives miserable with hard labour, digging clay, making bricks, and doing various kinds of field work, all sorts of labour that they had imposed on them without mercy. The king of Egypt then spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of them who was called Shipra and the other Pua. "When you attend Hebrew women in childbirth," he said, "look at the two stones, and if it is a boy, kill him. If it's a girl, let her live." But the midwives were God-fearing women, and they did not obey the orders of the king of Egypt, but allowed the boys to live. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, "What do you mean by allowing the boys to live?" And the midwives said to Pharaoh, "The Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women. They are hardy and give birth before the midwife can get to them." For this, God was good to the midwives, and the people went on increasing and growing more powerful. And since the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Then Pharaoh gave all his people this command: "Throw every newborn boy into the river, but let the girls live." There was a man descended from Levi who had taken a woman from Levi as his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to a son. And seeing what a fine child he was, she kept him hidden for 3 months. And that statement, "seeing what a fine child he was," actually the wording takes us back to creation, when God said things were good. You know, this woman had got this baby. It's like my grandsons when I first saw them, even they had tubes and oxygen and everything coming out here, there and everywhere. But I fell in love with them. It might have been a £2 scrap, but it was my £2 scrap, and I loved it. And this woman loved her son. And when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him, coating it with bitumen and pitch. That sound familiar? Yes. And she put the child inside and laid it among the reeds at the river's edge. And his sister took up position some distance away to see what would happen to him. Now Pharaoh's daughter went down to bathe in the water. And while her maids walked along the riverside among the reeds, she noticed the basket and she sent her maid to fetch it. She opened it and she saw the child. The baby was crying. Feeling sorry for it, she said, "This is one of the little Hebrews." The child's sister then said to the Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and find you a nurse among the Hebrew women to nurse it?" "Yes," said Pharaoh's daughter. And the girl went and called the child's own mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child and nurse it for me, and I shall pay you myself for doing so." So the woman took the child away and nursed it. And when the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, who treated him like a son. And she named him Moses, but she said, "I drew him out of the water." And as I said, this is something we've heard many, many times. But the background to this story actually begins in Genesis. And in Genesis 1 and verse 28, we have the creation of man and God giving an instruction. And he said, and God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, be masters of the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and of all the living creatures that move on earth." This was an incredible responsibility that God had given mankind. But then came along a few hiccups. The first hiccup was actually with the story around Noah, because the people were sinning. And God hated what had happened to his creation. Can you imagine what it was like for God? He'd created something which he, just as with our hearts, when we see our young babies, our hearts go out for them. That's how God felt when he created mankind and he created the animals. He said it was good. He said we were very good. And then mankind turned against him. But he saved Noah out of that. And Noah and his family did go on, and they were fruitful and they multiplied. But then God had a further plan. He was refining it. And he called Abraham. Second hiccup, because of Sarah. Because the be fruitful and multiply didn't happen. It took God's intervention. And so God intervened and he blessed Abraham and Sarah when Sarah was actually past child-rearing age. He had Isaac. And Isaac, who married Rebecca, had difficulties. Again, but there were two children. But with Jacob, we saw they were starting to be fruitful and multiply. And then they moved into Egypt because of the droughts and the famine. And I'm just going to pick up the story literally in Exodus 1, but verse 7. And I want you to listen to this. It says, "But the Israelites were fruitful and prolific." Were. It's a past tense. God's blessing had come to fulfillment. That part of it was done for them. They became numerous and powerful. And eventually the whole land that was allotted to them was full of them. They had been blessed by God. But God now needs to step in, because his people are not in a particularly good situation. He's got to now think about liberating them, taking them out of the circumstances that they're in. I called this presentation or sermon the women of the Exodus story, because actually I think there are five women here that are incredibly overlooked. So let's start off with Pharaoh. Get the men out of the way first. So it says in our Bible that there was a new Pharaoh who did not know Joseph. So this Pharaoh, was it he didn't know Joseph because such a long period of time and, you know, the history of the famine and what Joseph had done had just sort of faded into the distance? Or was it because he didn't want to know? Was it because actually he was quite prejudiced? And we can start to see this. If we look at it, we can start to read some of the paranoia that actually involved his thinking about the strangers that were living in his land. It says, if we look, it says in verse 9, "Look," he said to the people, "the Israelites are now more numerous. There's too many of them here. And stronger than we are. We must take precautions and stop them from increasing further." Or, you know, he thinks something's going to happen, although there's no indication of it. He says, "Or if war should break out, they might join the ranks of our enemies." Again, actually, if you think about it logically, the Israelites would have been probably fighting on the side of the Egyptians, because the Egyptians were the ones that gave them succor in a time when they needed help. He had prejudices about women and childbirth, and his attempts, and we'll just come back to that in a minute, but his attempts to control the population became more and more extreme. First of all, he enslaved them, and then the task became harder and harder. And then we have the paranoia setting in. He wants to kill all the boys. First of all, he wants the midwives to do it, and then he wants people to just drown the babies. And it's really, Egypt is a very strange country in the Bible, because actually it started out as being a place of safety. It was where, you know, the Israelites went to. Abraham went there. And actually, if you think about the story of Jesus, it was where Joseph and Mary took Jesus when they were threatened. It also came symbolic of sin and bondage and the evil. So let's move on to our women. So the first two are the midwives. So I don't know a lot about midwifery at this time in the Bible. But I do know one thing, and it was really coincidental, because I am a complete Radio 4 addict. So whenever I travel in my car, whenever I'm doing anything, I have Radio 4 on. And it's amazing what you hear. I get so much information from the sermons from Radio 4, just from their articles and all the other things that go on. And one of the things it was actually discussing this week, which is actually what helped me with this sermon, is they were talking about the rate of childbirth in prehistoric and early history population. And they reckoned that at a certain point in, you know, in history, the women had babies every 4 years because of, you know, the time of weaning and all the rest of it. But as they actually moved into a more settled area, where there were farming, there were cities, that period of time shortened down. So they were having babies every 2 years. So we'll get onto that reason why a bit later. But there were midwives for the role of assisting. But again, in this particular period of time, we don't know how much assistance people had. So I can only really talk about my mother. Not that she was a midwife. But she told me that when she was born, a local lady came in and helped her mum when she was born. I don't know if it's like this or not. But there's something really, really interesting about these midwives. First of all, there is only two of them that are named. So is this just midwives representing lots of midwives? Don't think so. I think this is actually two midwives. But the second thing is, Pharaoh is actually, or the king, to quote the Bible, is actually talking to the midwives face to face. Now, the Pharaoh at this time was an incredibly powerful man. The Pharaohs, the kings, would kill their families if it meant they could secure something. The pharaohs were not people, you know, that you actually went before and you didn't have your, you know, heart in your mouth. And I can imagine the women actually quaking in fear when they come to this audience. And Pharaoh spoke to the midwives personally. So it's quite clearly in the Bible, the king of Egypt then spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was called Shipra and the other Puah. When you attend the women in childbirth, he says, look at the two stones. If it's a boy, kill him. If it's a girl, let them live. And they were sent on their way to kill the boys. Now, it doesn't really matter whether these were professional women or the thought of doing that. If you are, because I work in a hospital, I get to work with midwives from time to time. And they are so proud when they deliver the babies. You know, it's just a wonderful experience. Most midwives say it's the best experience in the hospital. And so they would have been very, very upset. But what did they do? Well, certainly they didn't obey Pharaoh. In actual fact, they feared God. And then they turned the tables on the king. Why? Because the Pharaoh was prejudiced. He had prejudices about women and all sorts of other things. But it's noted, and this is in history, that actually a lot of the Egyptian women had real problems with childbirth. Perhaps they were weaker, more delicate, or perhaps, as I believe, God had blessed the Israelite women and they were strong and they could give birth at the drop of a hat. Obviously it was like that now, or sort of 40 years ago when I had mine. So when they were summoned back in front of the Pharaoh and he thunders at them, what do you mean by allowing the boys to live? The midwives say to him, well, the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian ones. They're actually playing on his prejudices. They are hardy and they give birth before the midwife can get to them. Well, what does it say about the midwife? It said, for this, God was good to the midwives. For the people went on increasing and growing more powerful. And since the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Now, at this time, to have a family of your own meant status. It meant your future was safeguarded. You had help and you had support. I rang my son on the way in, to the church today, and I said to him, I'm going to invite you for dinner, but the only reason I'm doing it is because I need your help. Because I need to move something and I'm not strong enough to do it anymore. That's what families are about. You know, the family provide and support, and they're there. And so God blessed these two midwives. Then we go on to the mother of Moses, who we're told is Jochebed. She sees her son and he's good. She manages to hide him for 3 months, and I don't know how she's done that. Because if you think of young babies, they're not quiet. They're not easy. But her approach to Pharaoh is actually quite different, because she's been ordered to throw her son into the Nile. And this is like offering a sacrifice to the Nile gods, you know. But what does she do? She obeys him. She places her son into the Nile. But then what does she do? She actually places him in an ark. And the ark, just as Moses came out of the ark and carried on the plan of God. Sorry, as Noah did that, so Moses. Yeah, you can correct me, don't worry. I get carried away when I'm talking because I don't actually have it all written down. But she doesn't disobey Pharaoh. But she alters it. She changes what she's going to do. She places him in the ark. She places him into the reeds. And then she leaves him there with her daughter in the distance watching. What happened to her? Again, God blessed her action because she was allowed to take the baby home, he nursed the baby. And one of the reasons why I said about childbirth, I think it was probably for the first 4, perhaps 6 years of his life, he had him. And she got paid for it as well, which was a bonus. So God had blessed the family. Now we come on to someone that most of the time we overlook. Who do you think I'm talking about? Huh? That comes last. There's one person in the middle. Miriam. Now, Miriam, I guess, could be about 8. We got anyone here about 8? No girls here about... But actually, if you think about this, Miriam is an incredible person. She's been given an incredible responsibility. There she is. She's been told by her mother to stand and watch what is happening. What do you think she's doing? If it was me, I'd be thinking, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And try and imagine what I'm going to do. But she waits there patiently. And then she sees Pharaoh's daughter come down to bathe. Doesn't do anything. She waits. And then as we say, the maids are walking along the riverside with her, and she notices the basket. She sent a maid to get it. What did the duck? So when Miriam saw this, Miriam popped up. And what's actually amazing is, I don't think Pharaoh's daughter would speak the language that the Israelites would have spoken. Don't know what language they spoke, but I'm fairly convinced that Miriam could speak Egyptian. And it would make sense. So Miriam is an educated little girl. She's being brought up in a God-fearing household. Wait to see what happens. And actually, this little girl is incredibly brave. Because actually, to step forward in front of Pharaoh's daughter and just to start speaking, it's not advisable. Not at that time. We don't know particularly the outcome there. But before I go on to the last woman, I want to just digress a little bit, because one of the things I want to say is people of all ages are important to God in his plan. We've just seen Miriam, a young girl, but if we jump through history, we have Samuel, who was 6 when he was called. He had David. Now I reckon, by a rough calculator, which I could be wrong, but I reckon David was probably between the ages of 17 and 21 when he was called, and he went and fought Goliath. We have the example of Mary, who was a very young girl, gave birth to Christ. Young people have a really, really important role in God's plan. But God's plan doesn't limit himself, because at the moment, the midwives, Miriam, Jochebed, they're Israelites, Hebrews. Pharaoh's daughter is the last one. And what she does is absolutely incredible, because she would have known of orders about the babies. And she finds this beautiful 3-month-old baby. And I looked at several commentaries and articles while I was researching this. And the translation that I've got, which says feeling sorry for it, which is in verse 6 of chapter 2, that's it, that's a much better. She had compassion on him, much closer. Her heart poured out to this little baby. She had to do something. So she defied her father. And she saved a young baby. She wasn't even a Hebrew. She wasn't even an Israelite. Anyone who believes in God can be part of God's plan. And in another translation, I read, and again, it's not in mine, don't know if it's in this one, but it said, towards the end, that actually she was blessed by God as a reward for saving Moses. Those 5 women, actually 4 women and 1 girl, saved a young baby, and that baby went on to deliver the nation of Israel from Egypt. And I think to myself, how does this apply to us? You know, they were in a really unusual situation and they stepped out in faith. It's about having God at the centre of your world. Because without God being there, I don't think Miriam could have stepped forward. Without God being there, I don't think that actually Pharaoh's daughter could have actually stepped forward. And I think that the pounding hearts that the midwife had were calmed by God, and God gave them the words to say. I just want to finish on a question. When we think about the Israelites, do we think they're all a nice united little nation, all the same? Because if we do, we're actually very mistaken. Because in Abraham was from Mesopotamia. Many of the family were, you know, from outside of what we would recognise as the Israelite culture. You think about Joseph. He married an Egyptian woman. So we've got Egyptians in there, all marrying, all in there. And Moses went and married a woman of Midian. God's plan of salvation, which we see that first step, is for everyone, regardless race, creed, colour, age, whatever. In the end, God's plan will come good, and we will all be there. And I hope that I actually get to meet Miriam and be able to say to her, "Boy, I was really impressed by you." Thank you very much.